Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, pickle bar, fresh, hot roasted peanuts, great snacks, beverages. You know, I mean, say for example, like that uncle shows up, you know, the one that ends, that's supposed to stay overnight and then stays for like 5 days. At least you'll have the snacks and the beverages to at least make it palatable. I mentioned beer. Hey, look, it's the weekend. You got so much sports going on this weekend. You got to go to Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. I am at the Chateau, which is the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, it's 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin, of course, is here. Been writing the open for days now. Something about iron, something about stone. Everything except something about the game.
Isn't that a Black Sabbath song?
Could be. I mean, Bob, I don't know. He's still mad at me about the Big Ten Network thing.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. As a matter of fact, you know what? I'm going to let Bartlett take over, and you and Ben Reichle can sit there and chat. I got to go write the open, okay, man.
Steve, he's on his way for makeup. Yeah.
Just hold on one second, Kev, okay? This is what he's mad about. He pours his heart and soul into writing these opens, okay? Now, tonight is some stone iron thing, I guess, right?
Maybe. I'm not giving it away.
Okay? And so I did this thing where we opened up and I go, hey, they haven't played him in 3 years, got a whiteout and a sellout. Okay? So on the journey, the Big Ten Network uses it. He's like, I pour everything into it. He does something stupid like that, and they use it?
Steve, I don't believe I said stupid. I said lame.
Steve, simple is best at times.
Of course it is.
And you know, Kevin's point tonight is to get there, get the makeup, and of course he's torn between being a brave fan from the standpoint of announcing and following the team, and of course his son could get in and make a difference in the game tonight.
No, that's not going to happen. It's not going to be an issue. It is a game. It is a football game in front of me, and I call it just like every other one.
Excuse me. Your kid's on your game chart.
Yeah.
Everybody's on my game chart.
Your kid is on your game chart.
I go pretty deep on those game charts.
Well, Steve, I think Kevin's looking for the John Facenda opening.
On a beautiful October evening in Susquehanna Valley, where the tundra is just slightly warm and you have iron onto the field. Can iron be penetrated by a tomahawk led by a brave? I don't know. You know? Meanwhile, hi, everybody. Got to sell out a white out. Michigan's for your first time in 3 years. Love it. Cut. Print.
That's it. I quit. I'm going to write the open.
I mean, this is what we deal with all the time. It's like, you know what I always have to remind him of? Hey, there's still 3 hours of game after the open.
I think Kevin looks at the game as the 60-meter sprint, and he wants that Carl Lewis opening.
I mean, it's like, Kev, there's still 3 hours of game after the open. I mean, really?
He has left the building. It's not Elvis that has left the building.
He's done.
And he is gone.
Yeah. And Sarah Bartlett, that's the first time I've heard you sound happy in weeks.
it's not because of the last Ravens game either.
Well, we know that.
It is a big one this week.
I know.
I got the steal. I know you're ready. And Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, is going to join us in a few minutes to talk about said game and about the Steelers. Here's the problem your team has. Okay, Sarah?
Yes.
And I say this with all due respect. What is going to keep Seattle at a high level for the next 2 to 3 years versus what's going to keep the Ravens from being at a high level for 2 to 3 years? Okay? It's how much you're paying the quarterback. And Russell Wilson, and again, the Ravens can't help this. Through pure performance, Joe Flacco has earned his money. Super Bowl winner, you know, outstanding player, done a lot of good things, okay? Been in the playoffs every year he's been the quarterback. So he's being paid as such, which then reduces your flexibility on other players you can sign. Versus a third-round pick a year ago in Russell Wilson, who's receiving third-round pick money of about $500,000 a year, which, by the way, opens up the floodgates of flexibility for Seattle to go out and sign the Percy Harvins, the Bobby Averills, and things like that, because they have flexibility based on how much they're paying their quarterback. It's an amazing NFL concept.
It's the way, you know, Steve, I know you've probably seen Moneyball, and you look back at the time when that came out, and you look at the brilliance of Billy Beane at that time, thinking through it. But the way the game is played now in all the major leagues, for the most part, is how do you work the salary cap, and have the Patriots found a formula that works for them most of the time?
Yes.
And are the other teams looking for that formula? And you're right. Franchise quarterback is the difference maker in the NFL. How do you put a franchise quarterback with the tools needed to be a championship team?
Yep, no question. No question about that. I mean, that makes a big difference. And you're talking about how Moneyball and how the A's are put together. Well, part of how the A's are put together is through sabermetrics, that there is a value on base percentage means something. And it does. Because in the end, while it matters to the player how they get on base, because if you get on base by way of a hit, your batting average goes up, which of course gives you leverage in negotiations. In reality, in how the game is played, a walk, an error, being hit by a pitch, or a base hit all have equal value.
Yep.
Right? And that's what he understands.
Yeah, on base percentage. I thought what was real interesting about Moneyball is I can remember those players. You remember David Justice was with the Braves, the Yankees, and the Indians. And that scene with Brad Pitt or Billy Beane and down in the batting cage talking to David Justice was the reality kicker. David, do you feel you're special? Well, yeah, you're paying me $70 million. Well, David, I'm actually paying you $3.5 million. The Yankees, this is how they feel about you. They're paying $3.5 million to play against you. You know, you do play against them. But I thought that was interesting. But it brings the business in. I know, you know, when you have the business people of sports on the show, Kevin falls asleep. But it is interesting, the economics of sports, all the way from, you know, the Penn State tickets scenarios or the licensing, on the way that tickets are proportioned out, and the way big business is involved in backing teams. You know, right now, Jacksonville's having a tough time in the NFL, but if you look at the economics of Jacksonville, there's not a large corporations that can support this. You know, the economics of sports and the money that these sports generate on the major league levels and the NCAA levels is a very interesting concept, and business schools are looking at these, and, you know, you've lived it and you've seen it. I think it's a real interesting facet of the business of sports and what we're seeing going on.
Well, and when you look at the pro level, $9 billion business is the NFL. Baseball's an $8 billion business. Then you look at the college level and the money that's invested back into facilities, Beaver Stadium, Jordan Center, Medler Field, Pagula Ice Arena, you know, even the field hockey complex, rec hall, things like that, weight rooms, so forth, practice facilities. I mean, it's all invested back in, which helps out the student athlete. Coming up in just a few moments, we'll sit down with Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, get a preview of this weekend's Steelers-Ravens game as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2010 Ford Escape XLT, one of the most affordable fuel-efficient SUVs, just $15,995. A one-owner, newly inspected and fully serviced 2012 Ford Focus SEL, $13,998. 2010 Dodge Nitro SE comes with warranty. Lowest price promise, $17,989. 2011 Ford F-150 XLT, an outdoorsman and contractor's choice, just $29,494. And a 2012 Hyundai Sonata 2.4-liter new tires, just $14,993. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Friday night. Shikellamy, Danville tonight. News Radio 1070 WKOK. 7 o'clock the kickoff and 6:30 the airtime with Kevin Herr and the coach Dick Hort. Bring in now Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Always happy to join you guys on a Friday afternoon.
Yep. Well, Tony, they have a win. And as they say in Major League, if you get two, that's called a winning streak.
And that's a realistic statement. That's how bad the Steelers' division is, Steve. I mean, you know, we hear coaches so often talk about taking it one game at a time. Well, the fact is the Steelers haven't really had to do that for the past decade or so. They've been able to circle the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year and make that their goal. And that's, you know, some years they've been closer than others, but it's always been at least a legitimate goal. Well, those things have certainly changed this year, and you talk about one game at a time stuff, and boy, is that ever true. You know, when you look back at the big picture, it's very hard to picture the Steelers getting back into any kind of a playoff race, but when you boil it down to one game, a win at home over a team that is struggling on Sunday, and all of a sudden they're one game behind the Ravens in the division. So, you know, they're a little bit better now that they've got Heath Miller back and Le'Veon Bell back. And maybe the offensive line is starting to at least be less bad, less porous than it was early in the year.
Yeah.
You know, it was a pretty good Jets front seven that they got a win against last week. So something positive has finally happened. And now they're, like you said, going to try to make it two in a row, I guess.
What kind of difference has Le'Veon Bell made?
It's been hard to gauge, I think, at this point because, again, you know, the line has been so banged up and has been so bad. And then, you know, even last week, the Jets have made a lot of running backs look, you know, subpar. This year, that's a pretty legitimate front seven that the Jets have. So Mike Tomlin says he really likes what Bell is doing. He likes the way he's running the ball. I think he's going to try to figure out whether that's a coach trying to talk up a rookie or whether there's some positives, you know, that are legitimately there. I think probably it's a combination of both. He's clearly the most talented running back on the roster. Whether the line's good enough for him to make a true difference or not, I guess remains to be seen. And again, I'm not so sure the Jets were the best gauge of that.
Antonio Brown certainly, he demanded, I want more. And it looks like, I mean, I got to give him credit. At least he's gone out there and he's been able to deliver more.
Yeah, Antonio Brown talks a lot. There's no question about that.
Yes, he does.
But the one thing about Antonio Brown is he works very, very hard, and he's bouncing back from what was a subpar season. So yeah, you know, and he's doing it with, you know, as the focus now, as the number one receiver on a team that can't run the ball. So you know, that's certainly a tough job. But he has, you know, he's certainly worked hard. You have to give him that. And yeah, he has responded. I think his job has been a little bit easier now that Heath Miller is back as a focus of that passing offense. There's no question about that. Miller can take a lot of pressure off of anybody, even as a tight end, you know, working with the receiver. Miller really is the number two option on this team.
What has made this rivalry with the Ravens happen? Has it been Baltimore's success, or has it run deeper?
You know, I think it's been, I think it has been Baltimore's success. I mean, so often over the past decade, you know, the team, you know, one or both of these teams have had legitimate shots at the Super Bowl, and heck, four times in the past decade, one of these teams has gone to the Super Bowl. So that certainly adds a lot to the rivalry. It's definitely a little bit different tomorrow. especially when you look back and you're not going to see Hines Ward out there. You're not going to see Ed Reed. You're not going to see James Harrison, Ray Lewis. A lot of the names that have, and personalities that have made this rivalry so big are now gone. So it will lose a little bit, and I think it loses the most, though, simply because the teams right now, you know, just aren't as good. I mean, for so long, these were the big boys, you know, in the division. Occasionally, the Bengals would step up and challenge, but these were the guys who actually got it done once the regular season was over. And, you know, that obviously, you know, even when as recent as last year, the Steelers were a 500 team, but they had a big win. They went into Baltimore with Charlie Batch as the quarterback and got one of their biggest wins of the season. So I think it's been personalities, but probably, Steve, more than anything, it's just been the fact that these have usually been two good football teams that play a similar style, a very physical style of football.
They won last week. It's only one. Yet you look at the division, and the division's not lighting the world on fire. So how important is this stretch of three or four games starting with the Ravens?
Well, I think it's huge. I mean, if they lose tomorrow, then all of a sudden the big picture becomes something that you really can't even talk about. But if they win tomorrow, then again, you talked about one game at a time, then, you know, you look to the next game. And then you're right, the division is not very good. A couple of wins in this division, all of a sudden they're pulling themselves up, you know, to sea level with the rest of these teams. So it's definitely a big stretch. You know, again, when you look at the big picture, it becomes a little more easy to be cynical, and this doesn't look like a team that can win, you know, 8 out of 10 games, 6 out of 8 games. But can they win Sunday? That doesn't sound so impossible.
One quick note. Penn State, of course, Patrick Chambers, Tim Frazier, DJ Newbill there in Chicago today for Big Ten Media Day. ACC Media Day occurred this week as well, and Syracuse, it did not take long for them to sell tickets like that. What is the ACC basketball picture like in Pittsburgh? Is there some juice around this?
I think there is. You know, I think there definitely is. I mean, the basketball team is not the reason that they had to get out of the Big East, obviously.
Of course.
Pitt really, you know, had a lot of success in the Big East, and the Peterson Event Center was a lively place, you know, most winters when Big East teams would come to town. But, you know, as sad as it might be to not see UConn make that yearly visit, it's pretty easy to not feel bad for yourself when you can circle a date and see, you know, when Duke is going to come to town and play at the Peterson Event Center. So, yeah, there is some juice there. I got to be honest with you, though, the Pitt program has to do their part. The reason that there was so much juice with the Big East is because Pitt was a good team for the better part of the last decade. They've struggled the past two seasons, and if that continues, well, you know, we've been there before when the Fitzgerald Fieldhouse was barely half full for big games. So Pitt's going to have to hold their own. If they do that, then I think it'll be just as exciting, you know, as the days were in the Big East.
Well, Penn State rolls in early December. That'll be interesting. It really will be. Thanks so much, Tony. Appreciate it.
Always happy to spend time with you guys. Thanks, Steve.
That's Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Thank Tony for the time. Just a little Raven Steeler preview for you, Sarah.
Oh, thank you so much.
Notice that we kept, you know, the hatred out of it.
Right, right.
You know, it comes down to, look, that division is wide open. Cleveland plays at Green Bay this week. The Bengals, to their credit, you got to give the Bengals credit. At some point every year, they remember they're the Bengals. So when you know. And then you have, of course, the Steelers. And the Steelers have won one game. They have not looked good at all this season, yet they're in a division where the next month determines their fate.
Well, Steve, going back to the question, what makes this a rivalry, is there something, and it could be very diluted now since the years have passed, but is there something in the formula of the rivalry that this Baltimore Ravens team was the Cleveland team at one time?
No, I don't. You know what, Ben? I don't think that's it. I think it's just the fact that it's the winning.
Oh, well, I think it's
the winning part. I think the fact that you're talking about a team that in proximity is close to you, and then at the same time, they now, you know, they're the defending Super Bowl champions. They won the division last year. The games between the two of them are hard fought. I think that's what makes a rivalry. You know, I always laugh, oh, they're going to rekindle the Penn State-West Virginia rivalry. They went 30 years between wins. Yeah. That's not a rivalry. I mean, Syracuse, they beat Penn State in 87 and 88. just because you play somebody every year doesn't make it a rivalry.
Oh yeah, and don't ask Les Miles, LSU's head coach, to define what a rivalry might be either, because you'll get a dissertation.
Well,
but you know,
LSU Alabama is a rivalry. You want to know why? They're the best two teams in their division. And they trade wins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a rivalry. I mean, Michigan-Ohio State, they talk about the rivalry between the two. Michigan has one win the last nine tries against them. It's starting to lapse to a point where, yeah, it's a rivalry, but...
Well, has the Baltimore-Pittsburgh NFL matchup taken the rivalry away from the Cleveland-Pittsburgh?
Oh, absolutely yeah. It has, because Cleveland has not been good.
Exactly.
I mean, the Browns have not been good. Yeah, there's a rivalry because that's Cleveland, and the Pittsburgh people want to keep them down. But that's about the extent of the rivalry. A real rivalry is where both teams feel they've got a shot to win, and they've traded pain over the last 10 years, where each side's going to be able to come up with a pelt here and there. That's a rivalry, all right? Especially when it's high level. I mean, the reason the Yankees and the Red Sox have been a great rivalry, it hasn't just been because of proximity, but because, you know, they win. All right, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, bringing you the SJS for a Friday. Kevin's on the road to Danville, memorizing and trying to recite his open.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Ben Reichle's with us as well. Kevin Herr, so nervous about tonight's game, he left an hour early.
And he's still stuck in traffic at the Norrie Bridge.
I mean, really? I mean... Okay, this is bad, okay? I admit it. Okay, now, you know, the Michigan-Penn State game was a big game, right?
Well, the biggest in a long time at Beaver Stadium.
Sure. And the airtime was 3:30. What time do you think I showed up at the stadium?
By your history, I'm thinking maybe 5 minutes of 3.
It was at 3 o'clock.
Okay. I missed it by five minutes.
I was actually sent a text by Jeff Tarman, and Jeff said, Steve, we have to record this, because there is something I have to record before we go out. He said, we still have to record the pregame open. Are you going to be in here soon? I said, yeah, I'll be there. But, I mean, you know, it was a nice day. I casually drove in, got there, parked, and then went in. But it just turned out, I picked that time.
I would say, Steve, you know it like the back of your hand, so you're comfortable. Now, of course, Kevin, he's been talking about this since I got here at the studio at 8:25 this morning about getting to the game, being prepared. I don't want to say he's like an expecting father, but it's almost like this game has that little bit of atmosphere to it that it's going to be a different deal.
No, it's a big game. It's huge. No, by the way,
I think it's a great atmosphere they're going to have up there. And, you know, Shikellamy, Sunbury, Danville, the proximities and the deals that they might not play. And, you know, league title, those things are all on the line. It's a beautiful night for football
Gorgeous.
Here in the Central Susquehanna Valley. So it should be a... potentially great game.
I have to drive to New England tonight because I have to attend a funeral on Monday, but I'll be listening to the game as I drive through tonight. Here is the Phil Steele did his all-conference team at the midway point. Here's his Big Ten team. Quarterback, first team, Nate Sudfeld, Indiana. Running backs, Melvin Gordon, Wisconsin. Amir Abdullah, Nebraska. Wideouts are Allen Robinson of Penn State, Jared Aberderis of Wisconsin, and Quincy Enuwa from Nebraska. Devin Funch is the tight end. Centers Brandon Vidabial from Northwestern, Spencer Long of Nebraska, and Ryan Groy of Wisconsin. The guards, Jack Muhort and Taylor Lewan, are the tackles. Second team, Nate Shielhouse of Illinois is the quarterback. Mark Wiseman of Iowa and James White of Wisconsin are the running backs. Corey Brown of Ohio State, Cody Latimer of Indiana, and Jeremy Gallen, Michigan. Their second team, Ted Bolzer, is the second team tight end from Indiana. And he has Corey Linsley, the center, Andrew Norwell of Ohio State at one guard, John Urschel's the other guard, Jeremiah Searles of Nebraska, and Brandon Scherf of Iowa are the tackles. And Phil Steele's third team, all Big Ten at midseason. Christian Hackenberg is a quarterback. Jordan Hall of Ohio State and Tevin Coleman of Indiana are the running backs. Josh Ferguson of Illinois, Devin Smith, Ohio State, and Tony Jones of Northwestern, the wideouts. C.J. Fedorowicz of Iowa is the tight end. Jack Allen and Blake Treadwell of Michigan State are the center and guard combination. Donovan Smith is third-team offensive tackle. Rob Havenstein of Wisconsin and Michael Schofield of Michigan rounded out. Now, on defense, Phil Steele's midseason report for the Big Ten is Tyler Scott of Northwestern, Shalik Calhoun of Michigan State, Rashid Hageman from Minnesota, and Daquan Jones of Penn State. Linebackers are Jonathan Brown of Illinois, Ryan Shazier, Ohio State, Danikos Allen of Michigan State, and Chris Borland of Wisconsin. Darquise Denard of Michigan State, Bradley Roby, Ohio State, Blake Countess, Michigan, and Stanley Jean-Baptiste from Nebraska in the secondary. Second team, Theron Cochran of Minnesota, Noah Spence, Ohio State, Bruce Gaston, Purdue, and Michael Bennett of Ohio State up front. Linebackers are Chichi Araguso from Northwestern, Max Bulla from Michigan State, and Anthony Hitchens from Iowa. Secondary, Damian Proby of Northwestern, B.J. Lowry, Iowa, Ibrahim Campbell, Northwestern, and Siante Evans of Nebraska with Tim Bennett. And the third-team defense, Randy Gregory of Nebraska, C.J. Olani in Penn State, Warren Herring of Wisconsin, and Dominic Alves up front. Linebackers are Desmond Morgan of Michigan, Mason Monheim of Illinois, Glenn Carson of Penn State, James Morris of Iowa. The secondary, Malcolm Willis of Penn State, Curtis Drummond, Michigan State, C.J. Barnett, Ohio State, and Jordan Lucas of Penn State. His first-team kicker is Mike Meyer of Iowa, Harrisburg's Cody Webster out of Purdue, Viangelo Bentley of Illinois, the kick returner, and Cavante Martin Manley, who had two punts in one game for a touchdown, is the punt returner. Second team, Jeff Budzine of Northwestern is the kicker, Mike Sadler of Michigan State, the punter, Marcus Jones of Minnesota, the kick returner, and Corey Brown of Ohio State's the punt returner. And third team is Chris Hawthorne, the kicker from Minnesota, Sam Foltz, the punter from Nebraska, Akeem Hunt of Purdue, a very good one, and the punt returner, Marcus Jones of Minnesota. So that's what Phil Steele has on his midseason report card for the Big Ten.
Steven, you're looking at the way the schedule is going to play out for all teams. You know, Michigan, a team that you saw last week, but yep. Michigan, a team that probably what their signature victory is going to be Notre Dame so far this season, and has played relatively, you know, I'm going to say probably average down the road against the Connecticuts and, of course, against Toledo.
Akron,
I'm sorry. And, of course, you know, stepped it up against Penn State. You know, that was two teams just going at each other for a long period of time. But where do you see the Big Ten coming down into conference play if you had to look ahead?
Well, Ohio State's the prohibitive favorite, and everybody knows that. We'll see what Penn State does next week when they go in there. But they have right now, I think it's safe to say at this hour, they've got more talent than everybody else. They can out-talent people. And that's a big part of what they do. I think they still have a couple of vulnerabilities on defense. Offensively, they've been really, really good, no question. So, I mean, they're the team to beat. Wisconsin in the division is the next team to beat because of, you know, obviously the running game they have between Gordon and White, Aberderis at wide receiver, Borland at linebacker. I mean, they have a good football team. And then Penn State's right there. Indiana certainly is improving. Indiana plays Michigan this week. That's very interesting, obviously. And then Illinois is certainly better than last year. It's on the other side where there's a struggle. Nebraska is undefeated in conference play. Michigan State's undefeated in conference play. Nebraska has vulnerabilities on defense. Michigan State has vulnerabilities on offense. Michigan State has a great defense, but they're vulnerable on offense. Then there's Michigan, the team that could still steal it because they still have to play both Nebraska at Michigan State, so they can still take it. Northwestern has as much talent as anybody, yet they're 0-2 in conference play right now. They're not off to a good start, and Northwestern is really good. But the bottom line is Ohio State beat them up. Carlos Hyde, the running back with that offensive line, beat them up. And when they went to play Wisconsin and Madison, they were physically beat up going into that game, and Wisconsin ran all over them. Minnesota's got a problem. And Jerry Kill, their coach, by the way, was released and sent home today from an epilepsy facility. Who knows when he's coaching again? You don't know. Iowa is better than they were last year, and I give Kirk Ferentz a lot of credit. They are a better football team than they were a year ago. And then, of course, Purdue is not, Purdue's, of course, on Penn State's side of it right now. Purdue is just not very good. Purdue might be the, at this stage, is the team that's bringing up the rear of the Big Ten. So,
Ohio State's to lose then?
Yeah, it's Ohio State's to lose. And let's face it, the SEC is deep and talented. I think the Pac-12 might be the number two conference this year. I think the number three conference this year might be the ACC. And we'll see, of course, the showcase game, Florida State and Clemson, coming up tomorrow.
Quickly, your thoughts on the situation in Texas with Mack Brown.
Well, he got a big win, which I think got the pressure off of him by beating Oklahoma, not only beating them, but beating them the way they did and actually using defense to do it, which was a big part of it because they changed coordinators and everything. Doug in Wellsboro's waiting. Hiya, Doug.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well, Doug. Great to hear from you.
Hey, just a couple things from last week's game. What is or isn't the ruling on that Amos pass interference call? Is there such a thing as uncatchable ball in college football or not?
Well, there really is not. But here's the issue, Doug. And Jack and I felt it was a good call for this reason. Gallen is running an up, out, and up. Okay. Well, he never got a chance to do the up part because when the ball was put in the air, he got shoved out of bounds. Now, do I think he's going to catch the ball? No. But because the ball's in the air and he's about to make that up cut, say he goes unimpeded. My opinion is he doesn't catch it. But he actually ends up closer to the ball than you realize. So we thought it was a good call for that reason.
Is the rule in college that you assume it's catchable no matter what?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much it is, yeah. And so in the NFL, you can call uncatchable ball. But in that particular – but again, the reason he got called for it, it's an out, up, and up. Okay? He never got a chance. He started the up. The second he did, he got knocked out of bounds and the ball was in the air. Now he's not going to catch it, Doug, in my opinion. Okay, but it actually would have been a little bit closer than people realized.
Yeah, I agree with you. He would have had a shot at it, but I don't think he would have caught it.
No, he would not. Yeah, I agree, Doug. He would not have caught it. Yep.
The second thing, real quick, Ficken, when he was kicking the new holder, they were really exaggerating the slant on the ball, and it was almost slicing on him. I assume Ficken wanted the ball held that way. Is that a change from what he had been doing or something? The ball had a slice to it this last week.
Well, first of all, it is a new holder. You do have to get used to it. He and Ryan Kaiser had a perfect sync between them. I think they don't really feel like using Butterworth because what if they crash in there? You lose your punter and your place kicker. So I think they'd like to have somebody else besides the punter hold. And I think this bye week actually comes at a good time for Ficken and Geiger to really work together, although Geiger had been the backup going into the Indiana game, and Ficken had kicked out of his hold in the pregame warm-ups anyway. So I think that part's going to be fine.
Okay. Last thing real quick. The throw to Allen Robinson right at the end of the game, the first thing I thought was that was a very iffy throw to begin with. There was five Michigan defenders around that. If that ball would have got tipped, they would have intercepted it. He was trying to fit that into a tight spot. And I don't think it was pass interference. Do you think it was?
In the end zone?
Yeah.
You're talking about the end zone play. Yeah. It is interference for this reason. Look at the left hand, which is on his hip, and then look at the right hand, which is around him. You notice, and here's the other tip off, Doug. Which Michigan players jumped up and down and were mad?
Right, none of them.
Yeah, it's exactly. You want to know why?
Because they knew they did it.
They knew they did it. It's the left hand that's on him, and the right hand was wrapped around the waist, and that's why they called pass interference on the play. You said the leaping play to Robinson? Is that the one you were referring to earlier?
No, no. The one there at the end in the overtime. It was a risky throw.
The one in traffic, yeah. But the one to the corner, to be honest with you, was a great throw, and Robinson sure caught that ball. The fade to the corner was a great throw. Robinson just didn't catch that one. He should have.
Yeah, you're right about that one. He should have had the fade throw earlier like that. But the one I was talking about specifically was the last throw. You know, throwing into the middle like that, it was – I mean, he still should have had the ball even though the kid interfered with him. But it was a very risky throw. But, I mean, who am I to say?
Well, you know what? Well, you know, it's a risky – any throw over the middle is risky because obviously there's a maze of hands. But it got there. I also think he should have caught that one too, like you, Doug. But you could tell right away his pass interference. And the tip off today is not one Michigan guy went, "Oh, come on!" They all kind of looked at each other and went, "Okay, the ball's at the 2-yard line, right?"
Hey, I'll get off the radio. But last thing, I was really impressed with the way Brady Hoke congratulated Bill at the end there. I mean, he just didn't give us the typical Lloyd Carr shake your hand, scowl, and go away. Brady actually said a few nice words, and I thought that was pretty, respectful of him.
You are absolutely right, Doug. A lot of us who have now been around Brady Hoke a little bit the last couple of years genuinely like him. He understands what it's like to be a coach at Michigan, but also at the same time what competition means.
Okay, thanks, Steve. It's great to hear on the radio.
Hey, you too. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it, bud. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome. Great to have you back. And just a couple minutes to go. Shikellamy Danville coming up tonight. We're looking forward to that. What do you have this evening?
I have a PCN live game up in Williamsport, South Williamsport against Muncie. So it's going to be the live feed around the state. And Dominic Bragolo from South Williamsport, I believe he has 1,946 yards so far this season. So it should be interesting up in the Mecca of Williamsport called South Williamsport.
Yep, love it. All right, that's great. Of course, the one that you'll hear tonight here on News Radio 1070 WKOK beginning at 6:30 with Kevin Herr and the coach Dick Hort will be Shikellamy at Danville this evening. That will be obviously a game that has a lot of postseason implications to it. Kevin's excited about it. Wrote the open in July. I mean, it's, really.
I think he took inspiration from Francis Scott Key.
Oh, wonderful. That's great. I thought it was going to be Lincoln.
Well, might be. Yeah, well, if he can do it in the same format as the Gettysburg Address, I think he'll live in infamy.
Yes, he will, because, number one, the Gettysburg Address was short, yes. shorter than Kevin's intros. So, 47 years ago, this rivalry began. A team of iron, a team with stone. And it's like, I can see it now. I cannot wait. I'll be listening tonight at 6:30 as I'm driving. I mean, I'll be going right through there at just the right time. I can't wait to hear this beauty.
Well, hey, Steve, hey, condolences on, I know you're going north, and also, too, the other day traveling through from Pittsburgh, Wilkes-Barre, back here, traveling, heard a little bit of the show in bits and pieces, but also the time you got to spend up there, those are times I've been through it. Those are times you just never forget.
But you know what? For those who don't realize, my father-in-law passed away on Wednesday night. I actually got out of here Monday, went up and spent 2 hours with him. And believe it or not, it turned out to be the last two really good hours for him. It just turned out that way. He was talking to the nurses about Joe Paterno. He was telling the nurses what I did for a living, things like that. We talked about Tom Harmon of Michigan. We talked about Notre Dame football. We talked about Penn State and the whole thing. You know, he got a little tired, obviously, near the end. But I did go up and see him. Thankfully, I did. Great guy. He and I had a wonderful, wonderful relationship. But at 85, he's now at peace. And we will lay him to rest on Monday. So Kevin will have the show on Monday. Buhner will probably be here. And I'll be back with everybody on Tuesday. Thanks for all the very kind wishes. Ben, thanks for spending some time with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Steve. Travel safe.
Have a great game tonight.